The bishop looked back at him, his expression thoughtful.
"Well, that's certainly candid," he said dryly.
"I refuse to be anything else," Thirsk said flatly.
"So I've noticed."
Mike leaned back in his armchair, fingertips steepled together in front of his chest, lips pursed.
"What I seem to hear you saying, Admiral," he said after a moment, "is that you believe you can build a navy which will eventually be able to meet the Carizzians on an even footing, but that you believe it's going to be necessary to blood our officers and men first, and that in the blooding process we're likely to see at least some additional defeats?"
"I think it's very likely that's exactly what will happen," Thirsk replied. "I could be wrong, and I'd like to be. It's possible we'll be given an opportunity to bring our numbers to bear sooner than I expect, and I assure you, my lord, that I intend for any squadron of ours that goes into action to do so planning on winning, not expecting even before the first shot is fired that defeat is inevitable. Moreover, wind and wave play no favorites, and the Carizzians' resources are stretched to the limit. They can't be strong everywhere, and if we can pounce on a few detachments, cut them up in a few local engagements before we commit to a full-fledged battle, the situation is likely to change in our favor. I simply can't promise that will happen, and absent some set of circumstances like that, we're going to take more losses before we hand the enemy a significant loss of his own. If I can complete my training programs, and if I can get our current flag officers and our current ship captains to start thinking in terms of galleon tactics and galleon-based strategy, then, ultimately, I expect us to win. We have the numbers and we have the resources. The plain cold fact is that we don't have to be as good as they are on a ship-for-ship basis, as long as we can build enough more ships and be almost as good as they are. That's what I think I can give you, whether I'm still around to command it or not." The day cabin was even quieter as the Earl admitted that out loud to someone at last, and Mike regarded him with a long, steady gaze.
"I understand," the bishop said finally, "and my respect for you has just increased still further. I hope you're wrong, that you'll have the opportunity to win those victories for us in command of the navy you're building.
At the same time, I think I now more fully understand exactly what it is you're trying to accomplish. The reason, for example, why you've been so adamant about building squadrons, not just single ships companies, and then sending those squadrons to drill at sea, despite weather damage." Mike glanced at Holland, who still hadn't said a word. Yet it was evident from the other admiral's expression that he hadn't kept silent because he disagreed with Thirsk, and the bishop nodded slowly as he recognized Holland's support for the Earl's position.
"You realize, my lord," he said, turning back to Thirsk, "that Thorast has been criticizing your operations on that very basis."
The bishop grimaced.
"He can scarcely criticize the way in which you've accelerated the building and manning aspects of your duties. So he's reserved his fire for the way in which you're organizing the ships as they come forward, and how hard you're driving them. In essence, his position is that since it will be some time still before the bulk of our construction is ready to be placed in commission, it makes little sense to send such small forces to sea, especially in the winter, and especially when they keep returning with damage that requires repairs and diverts yard workers from the new construction. Better to conserve our strength here in port, where we can carry out gun drill and sail drill in safety, until all of it is ready to deploy. After all, what's the point in losing hard-to-replace spars and masts and sails to winter gales, when there's not a single Carizzian galleon within 2,000 miles of Garath Bay?"
"We're not losing just spars and masts, my lord. We're also losing men," Thirsk admitted unflinchingly. "But that's because the only place to learn seamanship is at sea, and salt water is a harsh teacher. Whether we like to admit it or not, Carisian seamen are the finest in the world, and Karis has a far greater pool of trained seamen to draw upon. A huge percentage of our crews, on the other hand, are made up of landsmen, and if they haven't learned the seaman's trade by the time they cross swords with a Carisian squadron, then we might as well prepare them to haul down their colors right now.